Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Perspective, a show where we tackle paranormal and supernatural claims, belief in aliens, conspiracy theories, and pretty much any claim you'd like to bring us. My name is Ethan, and your hosts for the evening are Richard and Secular Rarity. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. I'm really looking forward to this.
It's going to be an absolutely awesome night, man. We are going to have so much fun. Richard and I, we've been studying. We've been training. We've been preparing. I don't know. Is it going to be ghosts? Is it going to be aliens? I'm so excited. If anybody out there isn't this excited, get excited. We're on. So
that's the best part, or one of my favorite parts of the show, is you never know what you're going to get. And we get such a big variety of calls, and we get to discuss and talk about some really fun stuff. Like me, I love talking about aliens. I love talking about ghosts. Whether I believe in them or not, you know, they're still fun to talk about.
Exactly. It's fun to learn stuff. You know, one of the things that happens to me all the time in these discussions is I start learning about something, some claim somebody talks about, you know, the coin drop thing, you know, about like ghosts dropping coins. I'd never heard that till I watched an episode where the host and the caller were talking about it. And I was just fascinated by that. Next thing I know, you know, it's 1 a.m. and I've got like 4 articles open and I'm just learning about, you know, why people have this psychological thing and, you know, things appearing and disappearing out of your vision. It's so much fun. And there's just so many cool things about the world to learn. So
it is. I have learned a lot from this show, and that's one thing I've enjoyed about like producing and being off screen is I can even though I'm like producing and doing like a million other things at once, I still get to sit here and absorb all this information from really smart people and learn new things about the world all the time, which is really nice. And I know we'll get to calls in just a moment, but for those who don't know, I did cancel 2 weeks of The Perspective. My mental health was not doing well. This can be a lot of work sometimes. I have a regular full-time job as well. And I was just getting overwhelmed, but I'm feeling good. I got my energy back. So I'm pretty excited, but I will say I hadn't taken a perspective off in over, it'd been a whole year. So I think after a year of doing every Tuesday straight, it's okay to take a day off or two. So I'm probably going to make that a yearly thing where once a year I'm going to take 2 weeks off just to catch like a mental break.
Yeah, that's a good idea for sure, man. You do a whole heck of a lot. And, you know, Richard and I just get to be idiots that sit on camera and talk about stuff, man. So it's all because of you and everybody behind the scenes, the call screeners and the mods in chat. And, you know, really just all the people watching, right? I mean, without everybody just hanging out with us and learning and figuring stuff out. I mean, now, don't get me wrong. We talked about it before. Richard and I would do this if nobody was watching. We'd just me and him just taking calls and chatting. But, you know, we're here and we get to hang out with some cool people. So
we don't even need calls. We've had shows where we just sit and talk.
Well, while that would be nice, we definitely do appreciate and want all your calls. So yes, if you do, you know, if you have a ghost story or proof of aliens, if there's a conspiracy theory you believe, call the number at the bottom of the screen, 951-364-2430. We take calls all throughout the night.
Yeah. And please do.
Talk to you. Yeah.
Fill those lines up, because otherwise it's just going to be Richard and I talking. And come on. Well,
good news. As much as that's fun for us, you don't want to hear that.
We do have some callers. We're just waiting for them to finish getting screening. Once that's done, we can jump right into it.
Well,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, if we've got some time, there's something that I've been following for a while now that's kind of on the edge of conspiracy theory stuff. And I wanted to throw it out there to either you guys or anybody out there watching. If you know about this, please jump in. Have you guys heard of this Havana syndrome thing? A few years ago, there was a whole bunch of diplomats from the United States down in Cuba. And they all started coming down with these really, really particular and strange illnesses. And the illnesses always seem to kind of relate to, you know, hearing things or feeling very dizzy or disoriented. And they started doing, MRIs, and they started noticing that there were problems, that there were noticeable, you know, places of the brain that had been damaged in some way. And there's discussion at the highest of high levels that it might actually be some type of sound device that plays sound that causes people to get hurt, you know, like,
really?
So that was kind of where it started, and it snowballed into this whole thing. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of people that are reporting these problems and that we've kind of looked into. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up is because while it may be easy to jump on the first thing and say, oh yeah, like sound waves are physical. If you target sound waves, it could hurt somebody. That makes total sense. But like one of the most recent things was there was a whole panel of experts in Cuba. And this includes like people that study the brain, people that study like physics, people that study like all kinds of things. And right. They were basically like, it doesn't really make sense that that's the problem. It doesn't really make sense that it's a sound, like some sound gun or something that can hurt people. So it's one of those things that's where it starts. It starts with that truth, that real thing, people actually getting sick, actually feeling bad. And then next thing you know, we've got people that have radar guns that can kill you with sound, you know? So right,
definitely. Yeah. And that's how the kind of the runaway train effect of conspiracy theory starts, with an element or a hint of truth.
Exactly.
There's something unknown and you ask questions about it. And when those questions don't give the answers you're expecting, like the cosmic ray sound gun, then you can't accept an official explanation. So mm-hmm. then it becomes a conspiracy. It becomes a cover up. And that's right. How it all starts.
And that's what we're here for, folks. And so, Richard, are you ready? Are you ready to get to some calls, brother?
I'm most definitely ready to get to some calls. Let's go.
All right. So I'm going to jump off screen. I'll queue up your first caller and secular rarity. You got it from here. So we have got Angelica from Colorado. Is a, if I'm reading this correctly, a psychopump. Please correct me if I'm not saying that right. Transports souls to the afterlife. Angelica, you're on with secular rarity and Richard Gilliver.
And yes, sir, that is correct. I transport souls to the afterlife through astral projection.
What do you mean when you say you transport souls? Can you flesh that out just real quick for me? Maybe like 30 seconds to a minute?
Yeah. Yes. Ghosts come to my house, or I encounter them just wherever I may be. They ask to be transported home to the afterlife. And I get into my astral form, I take them by the hand, and I take them home to the gateway of the afterlife.
Interesting. Why you? Why do they come to you?
I'm not sure. I know that there are more psychopomps, or at least I have read, that there are more human psychopomps here on Earth besides just me. And it just seems that I sometimes am in the right place at the right time to have the ghosts ask me to transport them home.
Can I ask you a question? Because a lot of this already is like, we're all familiar with this because of kind of cultural familiarity with growing up with ghosts and souls and things. So I'm going to take a step back and pretend I don't know anything. I've had no kind of contact with that cultural familiarity before. What is a soul? What are you calling a soul? Can you explain to me what you think a soul is?
The easiest way, I guess, for me to explain what a soul is, imagine the body as like being a car, the physical body being a car or a flashlight. A flashlight won't work without batteries, and you can't drive the car around without gas. The soul is the batteries or the gas.
So how are we differentiating this from the brain and the nervous system then, which could be described in a very similar way?
Yeah.
The brain and the nervous system, they do exist, but they are physical parts of the body. And if the soul leaves the body, think about somebody that is like connected to life support. The brain and the nervous system is still there, but it's not functioning because the soul has possibly left.
So what, have you ever not gotten a soul to the afterlife, or do you always seem to get them there?
If one comes to me and asks me to guide them home, I have never had, like, say, bandits or outlaws, so to speak. That's just a description, sure, for lack, sure, of a better way of me putting it.
Yeah.
Attacking me and trying to take the soul away from me when I'm on the way to the gateway. However, one situation that I did have, I was here at home and I was across the street. My neighbor was a very elderly man. And I didn't realize that he had had a heart attack inside of his house. And I heard the ambulance and everything stop there in front of his house. And the next thing that I knew, I saw him with my mind's eye, not with my physical eyes. I saw him standing in my living room, and he asked me, "Can you please transport me home?" And for a minute, I thought it was actually my neighbor that had just walked into the door, and then I realized that, sure, he did not have a physical form. And I was about to transport him home to the afterlife, but he flickered. And the reason that he flickered, I found out later from his son, that the paramedics did manage to do the defibrillator for him, and he was brought back to life. And when his body was functioning again, it pulled his soul back into his physical form.
Interesting. Can I tell you where? So I don't, Angelica, I don't think souls are a thing. And I think Richard's on the same page with me. And I just kind of want to push back a little bit, and maybe try and understand where you're coming from a bit more on this, because I find it really, really interesting, especially, you know, with what that story that you just told with your neighbor and kind of getting pulled back and stuff. You seem to be really comfortable with this idea of a material and immaterial kind of realms, but yeah, they somehow interact. Yeah. And I guess that's one of the sticking points for me. I'm confused as to how we can tell the difference. What would be the way that we could tell the difference to say this is a material cup or an immaterial cup? How could we do that?
For me, I guess it's like, it is literally a feeling that I get from them. Someone who is still in their physical body has a particular feeling about them that a ghost does not. A ghost feels completely different to me, at least, than a person who is still alive and in their physical form.
Interesting. Richard, do you have any questions?
I've got lots of questions. This is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I don't really know which way to take it. Because I've got lots of questions about what you're telling us about the, for example, the mind's eye. But one of the things that I'm kind of really interested in is your description of souls, because as I mentioned earlier, it's in our, we're called culturally familiar with the kind of spirit and the soul and things like that, but it's not a universal phenomenon. And I'm interested in what your take is on how we seem to be, have this image, this idea of souls and things within our culture, but yet people from outside our culture don't have these same ideas of souls, and they don't have the same perspective on what ghosts are and things like that. Could you go into that a little bit, why you think there might be differences there?
Okay, excuse me. I think I understand your question. I have encountered ghosts that in their life, in their physical lives, they were atheists. And when they came to me, they didn't understand what was happening. What probably one of the best examples was a man and a woman who had been, they had lost their physical forms in a car accident. And they came here, and the man was absolutely determined that they weren't dead, that he wasn't dead, he was asleep and he was having a dream. And his wife basically told him, well, honey, I think we're lost. We need to go with her so she can take us wherever it is that we need to go, because I don't think we belong here anymore. And he said, all right, that's fine. I will continue on with my very strange dream.
Do you...
When I got them...
Yes. Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead. No, please. Yeah, finish up. Finish up.
Oh, yes. So when I got them, I took them through the gateway and I got them into the afterlife. Their family members that he recognized, I believe it was his parents, he knew that they were no longer alive here on Earth, and he started crying. And it was at that moment that he realized that he wasn't alive anymore, because he saw his parents that he knew were not here on Earth anymore.
That's interesting.
Alive, living, that is.
So does that mean that, you can see, I guess, the afterlife? Is that you're leading them to the afterlife, right? And what?
Correct.
Okay. And so can you interact with the afterlife? If you could see him seeing his parents, are you able to see them as well?
Yes. And I will talk to them also. Very often, if I transport, and it's rare that I transport children by themselves, but sometimes I do. If I transport a child, a very young child, by themselves, who their parents are still alive here on Earth, when I take them through the gateway, I will usually, the people that are usually there waiting for them are like grandparents, great-grandparents, aunts or uncles, just somebody from their family that has already moved on from this physical form. And if sometimes it gets to the point where they are literally ancestors that are waiting for them. If all of their other family members are still alive here on Earth, ancestors will be there waiting for them, because the divine mind, or whatever you would like to call it, always wants the souls to have somebody waiting for them. They don't like having them there by themselves when I take them through.
Okay. So I've got...
very often they're frightened.
Where is it
that they go? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm just really interested in this. Yeah. Where is it they go? What kind of realm? Heaven? Is it a completely different thing to heaven? Is it kind of a material place in another dimension? I'm just really interested.
Yeah, you could call it heaven. The reason that I call it the afterlife is because I talk to many people who they may not understand or believe in the particular concept of heaven. So that's why I call it the afterlife. But yes, for the most part, you could say that it's heaven. It is a non-physical realm. You don't see any physical bodies of any sort in the afterlife. However, people and animals go to the same afterlife. People and animals, they are able to consume their favorite foods. They're not physical foods, they are spiritual foods. But if somebody says, I really wish I had an ice cream cone, they can have that provided to them.
Interesting. So
is there any way, sorry, I keep interrupting.
That's okay, Richard, get it. Go ask some questions.
Is there any way you can kind of, I don't want to say give evidence so much as in a like lab experiment type way, but is there any way you could demonstrate this to somebody who doesn't see it, rather than just anecdotally?
Mm-hmm. sometimes I have had people who truly want to see where I take the souls, and I could do it for you. I can't do it right this second, but what you would need to do is learn how to astral travel. There are plenty of books out there, and I'm sure there are online, maybe not necessarily classes, but online courses of how to astral travel. And if you could learn how to astral travel, I could go to wherever you are, and I can take you to the afterlife. I can't take you through the gateway, but you can stand on what I call the porch, and you can look into the gateway and see the afterlife for yourself.
Wow. Why couldn't you just come to me? Why would I have to astral travel to you?
I could go to you, and that is what I would be doing, but you would have to learn how to astral travel first. I can't force you to leave your body if you don't know how to astral travel.
Can I? So let me jump in here, Angelica, because we've got some other really cool calls I want to hop on next. But I've got two quick questions that in these types of circumstances I always love to ask people, and I want to say, and then before we end it, I'll throw it back to Richard that way, I guess. So my first question is there any possibility that you're mistaken? That all of this maybe just isn't real? Is there any possibility?
I suppose that is possible. And I remember I had somebody ask me one time, if you are taking them to the gateway, to what you see as the gateway to the afterlife, how do you know that you're just not taking them somewhere and depositing them in a black hole or something like that?
Yeah.
I was trained by, I hope it's all right if I say angels. I was trained by non-physical beings who it is their job to transport souls to the afterlife, and I think they know where it is. Mm. I was taken there by them to see where it was. Here on Earth, I have a lousy sense of direction, but I can always find the gateway to the afterlife. I can't mistake it for anything else.
I mess up left and right all the time.
Yes, I always know where it is.
Well, let me ask my last question. And like I said, I'll let you answer. I'll throw it back to Richard if he has anything, and then we'll get on to some of these other wonderful calls, which thank you, Angelica, for calling in and speaking about this and just being honest with us. And, you know, Richard and I aren't here to win. We're not here to strip anybody's, you know, belief or happiness or anything. We're just interested. And that last question that I asked really rolls into this question. So you said, hey, yeah, There could be a possibility, however small of a chance it may be, but there could be a possibility that you're mistaken. And my question is, if you found out you were mistaken, what would that change about your life day to day? Do you feel like anything would be different?
If I found out that I was mistaken, I would probably have to ask, the angels and the deities who trained me how to do this. Why did they show me how to do this if none of this was true? And I would probably continue talking to the ghosts and communicating with them. Yeah. But if I am not taking them to where they need to go, I would ask one of the angels to take them instead of me.
Okay. Well, let me throw it back over to Richard and see if he's got any other questions or anything to add on. But thank you again. And please, you know, call back in. It sounds like there's a lot of really, really interesting stuff you've got to talk about. And we do this show every, you know, pretty much every week, Tuesdays, 7 p.m. right here. So, Richard, what you got, man?
Yeah, it'd be great if you could call back in. And one thing I'd like to see if you call back in is I'd like you to go away from me, and I'd like you to look in, because as I've mentioned a couple of times during this call, we've talked very much about our cultural perspective. I'd like you to go away and have a look at how different cultures view the afterlife and souls, because it's not a universal concept. And I want you to have a think about, go and really look into those things and have a think about how what you're seeing, what you're perceiving to be one thing, how it differs in different cultures, and how you can kind of look at that and make sense of that. And as Sekiola said, you know, the brilliant question he asked, could you be mistaken? And have a look at how people interpret these things in different ways throughout the world. And I think that will give you a different, this is the name of the show, The Perspective. It'll give you a different perspective on what you're seeing. And I'd like, love for you to do that and go away, have a quick look at that and call back in and give you give us your thoughts on those different cultural perspectives and how you interpret those.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, and Angelica, thank you so much. This was super, super interesting.
Yes, thank you.
Please call back in and go look at some more things and you know, see if you can maybe learn some more, you know?
Oh, yes, I definitely will.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Richard, what'd you think?
I love that call. It was, I mean, when you get callers like that who are so respectful and who are genuinely just wanting to talk, it's so nice. That's what we're here for, to have those conversations.
Exactly.
Just to look at different perspectives, to listen to different perspectives, and to give different perspectives. And one thing that really struck me about that call was how ingrained everything she said was in our cultural background. In our Judeo-Christian like cultural background,
and
there are so many different perspectives out there.
Yeah, I thought that was a really, really good vein you were going down. You know, that was, and that's another great thing about this is when we get to do this type of stuff, we get, you know, more perspectives. I think we've said that like four times tonight, so that's awesome.
I'm not advertising the show at all.
Let's get it to 10. Let's get it to 10. But before we do that, Richard, you ready to take another call?
Yeah, always.
Let's talk to Harley, it looks like, in Nevada. Harley, you are on The Perspective.
Hi,
what would
guys.
You like to talk about? Hey.
Hi.
Hey, y'all. Just to let you know, it is Nevada, not Nevada. That's not right, first and foremost.
Okay, so I'm from the South, and Richard's from the UK, so neither of us can speak properly. So,
And it's not proper Spanish, but everybody in Nevada says Nevada.
Nevada.
So we kind of got it. Yeah, okay. Gotcha. But anyway, so there is a really popular museum out here. Am I allowed with copyright to say what the museum is? It's on
downtown
part of the strip.
Yeah, I think you can say the name. We're not sponsored by them, so.
Okay. It is the Mob Museum.
Okay.
And now they have walls of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre that are, or pieces of the wall up on there. I haven't been there since they renovated it. But when I was a little girl and we moved out here, my uncle was working, it used to be the post office before it was the Mob Museum. And every postman who, like, what happens is when you switch branches, like, you could be in the same city of Las Vegas, but if you move from one post office to the next, you lose seniority. So you get the worst route and the worst hours, that kind of thing. You want a shift with a lot of bathroom breaks, places you can go get something to eat, somewhere shady, right? It gets hot in Vegas. Okay, so you're looking for something like that. And where this Mob Museum is, or the post office at the time, my uncle just couldn't for the life of him understood why nobody was bidding for those spots. And him and his wife helped babysit me when I was a little girl, and we would pick him up from work. And one day I said, you know, it's, I must have been like 7 or 8 at the time. And I said, you know, those uniforms with the red stripes down the pants, those look a lot fancier than yours, and you should probably change into the red stripes. And my aunt and my uncle got really quiet, and I didn't understand why. And I was kind of listening in, and I described uniforms that were recalled in the 1970s. Hmm. And I had never seen a picture of a postman with a red stripe down the pant leg. Like, I've never experienced that. And the reason why nobody ever wanted to bid on that is because the postmasters always said, you didn't want to go in there. That place is haunted AF. And
so let me hop in right there real quick. Let me hop in right there, because I think we've got a lot already that we might be able to really dive into. No, you're doing great. This is what we're here for. We love these calls. We want to hear the stories, but we do have a time frame. It sounded like what you were saying. Let me kind of shout it back to you. You tell me if I'm on the same page. It sounds like you were somehow able to see maybe clothing or people from a time period past that couldn't possibly be existing today, and there's no way you could have seen them, right?
That is correct. And they looked as human as my uncle did right then and there.
How do you think you could do that?
And my aunt what did do you not think, see them.
What do you I, think was the
I
method?
I have no idea.
Okay. That's a,
I have no idea.
That's a beautiful place to be.
And, you know, at the time, they probably said, oh, I probably just saw it on a movie or chumped it up to something like that, which could very, very well could be.
Sure.
But when he did take that job, his job, so the building itself is 3 stories. Gorgeous on the inside. We don't have buildings like this in Las Vegas at all anymore. The bottoms were offices. The main floor was like where you would, you know, get stamps and things like that. And then upstairs were the locker rooms and this beautiful green marble shower. And I would go and play in there while he cleaned up to gain a little extra money. And I would just spend time there. And there was one time where he said, we were at the top of the stairs on the main level, looking down at the offices down below. And he said, is anybody in here? I'm closing out for the night. And we heard a distinct whistle. So he's like, oh, shoot, you know, somebody's down here in the basement. Let me just go figure out who's playing this stupid game. And like, let's get the heck out of here. You know, it's closing. And we got to the edge. All the lights were turned off. We turned on all the lights in the offices, turned off all the lights. And I was getting spooked out by this time. And when we hit the floor of the basement, which is now a bar, which goes upstairs to the main lobby, he said, okay, I'm locking the door now. And we heard a whistle from atop the stairs.
Can I jump in real quick? Because there's lots of things I
want
to ask.
Yeah, of course.
And this is a good call for me, because my day job is being a mailman. So
I thought you were going to say your day job was being a ghost. That would have been more interesting, but I'm sorry. So, go ahead.
Right?
I want to skip backwards just a little bit to something you said earlier, where I just interrupt myself by telling people that we do still have open lines. If you want to call the show, please do. I'm very interested in hearing from repeat caller Cassidy, because you made a prediction and I want to talk about that prediction. So getting back to your callers, I want to ask you about, you said you could be mistaken. Mm-hmm. what makes you think that you weren't mistaken? And the reason I ask that is because you said specifically you'd seen things that you could not have seen. How do you know you couldn't have seen them? Because our memories as human beings are really bad. And we pick things up all the time subconsciously that we can't recall consciously. So what is it that you think persuades you that that's not the case? That, in fact, there is something specific there that means that you haven't seen these things before?
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing them walking around like normal people, and I just made the off comment like, dude, your uniform doesn't look as cool as theirs with the red stripes. And like everyone acted like I like farted in a cemetery or something. Like everybody looked at me like, what did she just say? That can't be the case whatsoever. Now, is it possible that in my child's mind, I made these up and saw these uniforms like on a Hallmark card 3 years ago? Very well could be.
Yeah.
But the fact that there were other experiences there make me lean more towards the belief that I actually did indeed see something then and there that day that I had not yet seen prior to that.
That's amazing. Thank you. And let's fast forward to those other experiences, because that was the other thing I wanted to ask you about. You heard a whistle. You heard a whistle when your uncle, I think it was, you said, called out. How do you know that whistle?
I know with you UKers, like how the levels are different, right? You have the ground floor and then the first floor, right? But we were in the basement. And we heard on the ground floor, we were at the top of the stairs on the ground floor going into the basement. And he hollered, is anybody in? I'm closing out for the night. And here's a whistle in the back of the offices that were in the basement. So we go down to see who it is, right? And we
look. How do you know it was a who?
Can't find anybody.
How me do you know and my it was uncle, a who?
They took care of me when my parents worked.
No, what he was asking, I think, and Richard, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think what he was asking was...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. No. So when you heard that whistle, when you and your uncle heard that whistle, how do you know that the whistle was produced by someone as opposed to something?
Because we set the alarm and locked the doors and the alarm didn't go off. It had like a 2 minute
don't like, birds whistle
warning thing. I'm sorry?
I said don't birds whistle or wind coming through the crack of a window? Couldn't the whistle have been
I can't make the whistle. It's the whistle you make when you see a hot girl down the street. It was that specific whistle.
Okay.
And I've sort of like that. And I've never heard any bird in Las Vegas ever make that noise. Of course, the wind could have done it, but the fact that nobody ever wanted to bid for those jobs, the fact that I've been on the paranormal team at that location and have experienced things, the fact that it's been on some Travel Channel shows with paranormal people that are kind of seedier than I am.
So that kind of leads me to my next thought on this. That leads me right there, which is, are you familiar with the psychological thing called priming? Have you ever heard anybody that knows much more about priming? It's something that's priming. Very...
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Like where I show you something, but before I show it to you, I go, hey, man, did you catch that football game last night? And then I show you something that doesn't really look like a football, but you see a football because I mentioned footballs.
Absolutely.
Do you think
that could have
Yeah, go ahead.
And what happened when I saw the red stripes? For sure.
Okay.
But the whistle, no, it was right on cue, and it was very serious. Now, when I went back for paranormal investigations later on in my adult life, I didn't experience anything quite to the extent of certain TV shows played them out to be. but it definitely has something special going on there.
Yeah. Well,
for sure.
I think this was very, very interesting. There's a lot of, it sounds like there's a lot of stories kind of tied together even, that maybe need to get, you know, pieced apart and kind of looked into a lot further. With that though, and I think, you know, just like the first caller tonight, this was a wonderful call, because all this is at the end of the day is just some adults sitting around trying to understand stuff. And if that's not the purpose of life, I just don't know what the heck is, y'all. So, thank you so much, Harley. We really appreciate you giving us a call.
Thanks, guys.
Call us back. Hang out with us.
Okay. Have a good night. Bye, guys.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Man, good stuff already, man. Which, yes, by the way,
so much to unwrap there.
Oh yeah, I know. And you know, I'm no expert on thinky stuff. You know, there's all this science-esque whatever that's out there, and there are much smarter people than me. But it seems to me so often that when I go looking into what experts are saying about what our brain is doing all the freaking time, it is so fascinating. There is just so much going on up here, and it is so hard to pull that all apart and know what's true and what's real. And that can lead us to some really bad stuff potentially. I don't think either of our callers today so far are in that boat, which, by the way, it does look like we have open lines. So if you're out there and you've thought about calling, we've still got time. Go ahead and fill up the queue for us. All right. But Richard, let's get to another call. What do you think?
Yeah, let's go. Come on.
All right. It looks like we have, from California, we have David. David, you are on The Perspective with the wonderful Richard Gilliver and Secular Rarity. What's up? What you got?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. Great.
Good, thank you.
Yes, I don't have as exciting a topic as some kind of psychic event or haunted house. But I had a few weeks ago, and I'm just calling in again about this general idea of the vaccination campaign, especially the mandates now, as being something more akin to a criminal syndicate or a totalitarian takeover than it is having to do with really much about health or making people better or saving people. So,
real quick, David,
maybe that's kind of obvious these days. I'm not sure.
That's all right. So real quick, just to clarify for myself, Richard, and everybody else, are you for more people getting the vaccine or not for that?
No, I'm strongly against that.
You're against people getting the vaccine.
Well, the vaccine is a valuable tool, but it should have only been used for people who are truly high risk, people over 65.
Why? I'm going to jump in here, and I'm going to tell you why I'm going to jump in, because I got COVID in November last year, and I have been really ill with it, and I'm still not recovered from having COVID.
Yeah.
I've gone from being literally...
I can give you some really good advice about that. Good advice about that. There is a bunch of sites that are dealing with long COVID.
Yeah, sites backed up by reputable...
to actually heal from it.
Okay, so are those sites backed up by reputable researchers and more importantly, medical papers that peers have reviewed?
Absolutely, 100%.
Cool.
One is called, I believe it's covidlongcallers.com. I'll check them out.
So there's a fantastic... fantastic Facebook group for this wonderful channel.
Yeah.
Please go there and engage with us. There's also a Discord as well that Richard and I and Ethan will be in the after show right after this show. So definitely feel free to go in all of those places. Let me just come in real quick here and ask and kind of push a little bit further on this whole you don't think people should have the vaccine thing. How many years of epidemiology do you have under your belt? Would you say more than 10 or less than 10?
Well, I am a scientist. I'm a chemist.
And so over 10 years of epidemiology research and training.
No, I'm not claiming to be an epidemiologist.
But okay. Okay. See, because I'm
to be able to read the papers.
I'm not either.
Many papers.
Hang on for me, David. I'm just going to mute you for just a quick second, brother. I'm not an epidemiologist. Richard is not. None of us are virologists. None of us are super well trained in medicine stuff. If I was going to mix a bunch of chemicals together, I wouldn't want to go to an epidemiologist. I'd probably want to go to somebody like you, who's trained in chemistry. And I think it's valuable that we recognize that certain people have expertises and training. And we take those people and I'm not saying take everybody at their word, brother. Don't just read the first thing or watch the 10-minute, short clip and just run with it. But it seems to me when the vast majority of, like, let's say, meteorologists or physicists or virologists, when the vast majority of them are holding up multiple studies and saying, read through this. We've all looked at it. It's all looking pretty damn good. I think it's valuable that we listen to those people. And I guess my question here is, do you also agree that there's value in expertise? Let me unmute you real quick here, David. Sorry about muting you real. Do you find
100%? I 100% agree with that.
Okay.
100%
okay.
Agree, of course.
So,
and, are you familiar with Dr. Robert Malone, who is the inventor of the mRNA vaccine?
Off the top of my head, I'm not familiar with him.
He's been very outspoken lately. Right now, he has a really good piece on YouTube with Jimmy Dore. And he is basically saying the exact same thing, that it's very irresponsible for large numbers of people to be vaccinated, because for one thing, this is what's called a leaky vaccine, which means it actually does not stop the transmission of the virus. And but like I said, you can just tune into him. It's Dr. Robert Malone. He's very
sure. Why does that matter?
And he's probably the world's expert.
Why does it matter if it doesn't stop the transmission of the virus? What matters is whether it stops people actually dying from it, which is what it is doing.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's doing.
Well, but the whole,
that's its purpose.
The logic of trying to get everyone vaccinated was because we hoped it would stop transmission.
We hope.
No, it wasn't. No, 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 no.
Hang on for us, David. Hang on just a second. I'm just going to mute you real quick again. Go ahead, Richard.
The purpose was not to stop the virus transmitting. That wasn't the purpose. This is a pandemic killing thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people. The purpose of the vaccine was to stop people dying. And that's exactly what it's doing. All the figures that are coming out show that that's what it's doing. It is fulfilling its purpose.
Yeah. And it's worth mentioning before I put you back on, David, it's worth mentioning that in Canada, my neighbor here in the US, they've only had 27,000 deaths and they are outraged about it. In the United States, we have over 600,000 people. Over 600,000 people, guys, that have died in our country, and we are not outraged about it. And I'm concerned that if more people don't get this vaccine, I'm concerned more people are going to die, David. And that's hard for me to wake up in the morning. That's hard for me to go to work, to buy groceries, knowing that right now in my state is full to the brim with people dying of COVID, not having COVID, people dying of COVID, man. And if this vaccine can bring that down, I am all freaking for it. Period, end of sentence. I have had my shots. The moment a booster gets allowed, I will have that as well. But let me throw you back on, see what you have to say about that, David.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good.
You know how these shows go.
Let me tell you the real reason that many, many people in the United States are dying. Mm. It's because there's a nearly complete ban on early treatments of COVID in the United States. And if I can give you one example of that, I have a close friend who reached out to me. She had been had COVID for 13 days. She finally checked herself into the hospital. She's basically just taking care of herself, but she was really, really sick. She checks herself into the hospital. They put her on IV. And then a day later, they let her out of the hospital. I'm like, well, what was the healing medicine that they gave you and their IV? It turns out they put her on saline solution. Hmm. So there's like a complete ban on early treatment. And early treatment is really you have about a window of 7 to 10 days.
Yeah,
where the virus is mostly active when you can actually.
Did they tell her why she was in hospital?
They were waiting because for people to go to the hospital before they get treated. And even in the hospital, they're not really treating people. So this is the reason that people are dying in the United States. It has nothing to do with the vaccine.
David,
well,
go ahead. I was in hospital with COVID.
Yeah,
I was in for one night, only one night. I received all. They didn't give me any treatment. I was put on oxygen because my oxygen levels were very low. And though they raised my oxygen levels and they released me, and I've not had that same problem since. You don't have to be in there,
yeah,
forever.
But you see that you weren't treated, right? You agreed that you weren't not treated.
Hang on for me, David. Let me jump in here because I'm one of the things that I'm concerned about again, man. Richard and I love doing this. We love having these conversations where we push back. And I think this entire time you've been respectful. Here's what concerns the living shit out of me, man. Plain and simple. More people are going to die because they aren't listening to the mounds and mounds of peer-reviewed science. In science as a discipline, it is cutthroat. It is hardcore drag out, knock down. If you're wrong, I will show you 1,000 times over. And when we have that stuff 1,000 times over, and I mean, dude, do you know how many countries came up with their own individual vaccine? And it works. This is something for me that I absolutely think everybody, every single person, go talk to your doctor. And if your doctor says it's okay, you need to do this. David, we appreciate you, man. We appreciate you calling and having letting us push back and stuff. We're going to move on. We're getting close to kind of the end. Thank you so much, man. And please, you know, like I said, go to the Discord, go to the Facebook and throw up those links. Let some people who are trained. I know there are some wonderful, wonderful people in here. Richard and I are just idiots. Sorry, Richard, but we're just idiots. I'm disagreeing. There are some great people out there in both of those communities, the Facebook group, the Discord. Please go throw up that information, okay? And we'll take a look at it. And I hope that if we're wrong, we'll change our minds. And if you're wrong, you'll change yours, all right?
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks so much, David.
Thanks, David.
All right. Look at this. We got a wonderful, wonderful super chat from the great Cynthia McDonald. If you don't know Cynthia, go learn. She's saying, enjoying Richard and Secular Rarity tonight. Great show. Thank you so much, Cynthia. And do remember, guys, we still have some time. If you do want to show your support for these lovable idiots up here, go ahead, throw in a super chat. We'll read them live and we'll look silly doing it. What do you think, Richard, before we grab this next call, what do you think about these calls so far tonight, man?
I think they've been great. They've been very respectful, everyone. And I'm very concerned about misinformation.
I agree.
Especially with COVID, it's something that's been very, it's personally affected me. It's still affecting me.
Yeah.
Like 9, 10 months after I got it.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't want misinformation spread. And, you know, he mentioned, you know, someone talking on YouTube. I don't care what people have to say on YouTube about it. I really don't care. What I'm interested in is the actual medical research.
Right.
The medical research. I've been in hospital. I was treated for the thing that I was there for.
Yeah.
It was a symptom of COVID. It wasn't, you know, my oxygen levels had dropped. It didn't cure the COVID because they couldn't do that. Especially at the time when I was in there, but it treated the problem I had, which was caused by COVID.
Yep.
And if you confuse that with, oh, they're not treating people. Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. They're treating what they can treat. Mm-hmm. So don't spread it. Don't go out there spreading info. Don't listen to YouTube videos. That's There's right. plenty of medical research out there telling you the truth.
Right.
Go and look at that.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, man. Cause I, like I said, truly, it. I was reading something today because the Canadians are having an election, and I was reading something today, and there was a whole bit about how upset people are about the 27,000 people that have died in their country, and my country has so many more. We've had so many people affected by this, and still, it continues. And one of the reasons it continues is exactly what you said, man. Misinformation. Yeah. So that's one of the things we get to do here. And if we're wrong, I hope that Richard and I will come back on and say we are wrong.
Most definitely.
I'd be willing
my
to
favorite
bet.
Thing to do. It's that's my right. favorite thing to do.
Yeah. We don't get to be wrong anymore. Hey, look at this. We got another super chat real quick from the great Amit Matthew. This guy is always hanging out with us. We appreciate you, Amit. Some claims are more harmful than others, he says. You folks do an excellent job picking up on the ones that are and pushing back accordingly. Thank you so much, Amit, and we yes, greatly you appreciate you. And everybody else out there, by the way, if you're hanging out with us, you are awesome. Did you like the video, by the way? Did you like the video? Did you push that thumbs up? Go ahead and do it. Ring the bell. Subscribe. I think I said all the things. Did I say the things?
You said the things.
Let's do it. Let's grab another call. It looks like we have our good friend Amit Matthew on the line. Amit, are you there?
Hi, Secularity. Hi, hey. Richard.
Hey. Hi, Amit. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How about you folks?
Can't complain.
Good. No, not
what,
at all.
What do you want to talk about, man? It looks like it's going to be an interesting conversation.
Oh, it's interesting. I hope I didn't give like a weird impression of it being hostile, just because I love hearing about other belief systems.
Yeah, yeah.
And Richard, you said that you were a Buddhist.
I'll just correct you. I wasn't actually a Buddhist. I've done a lot of studying Buddhist. I do a lot of meditation practice. I've never committed to being a Buddhist.
But you know about it. You're knowledgeable about it, right?
Knowledgeable. I've been looking at the scriptures. I've been studying meditation for 20 years, and I've been academically studying the scriptures for about 10. So I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. Well, one thing that stood out to me on previously on this show was you mentioned like taking the Judeo-Christian context away from things. Mm-hmm. And like I grew up in India and I was exposed to Hinduism growing up. So that like really made sense to me because the whole concept of like an afterlife, heaven, hell, that sort of stuff, so alien from a Judeo-Christian view.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
certainly. From many, many different cultures around the world. I mean, I was specifically thinking of that kind of Indo-Buddhist view when I asked that question earlier on tonight, because that's the area I'm familiar with. But if you can go to indigenous tribes in places, and they have completely different belief systems with completely different concepts.
Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of where I wanted to dig in. I wanted to find out more about Buddhism. Mm,
okay.
And, you know, I can read stuff, but it's Like, I have read stuff, but maybe some of the, like, details are something that I can pick your brain about.
Yeah, anytime. And one thing about Buddhism, when you're reading stuff, just as a general thing for everybody, it is, I would say, is probably the most misunderstood religion out there. There are so many misconceptions about what it contains and what it teaches. We could talk for a week just about the way it's misconceived, especially in the West.
Yeah.
Me? Yeah. So
jump in, ask what you want to ask. And
go ahead, Amit.
Go ahead.
No. He was just saying, ask your question, brother. We're here.
Neat. So my first question was, true or false, does Buddhism have gods?
It does have gods. Scripturally, it does. I want to clarify that point because it doesn't have a creator god. In the kind of Christian view of things, the universe in Buddhism is eternal. There was no beginning to the universe. So in Buddhist cosmology, so scripturally speaking, it doesn't have a creator god. And in fact, Buddha came across one of the Brahma gods in one of the suttas, and he came across a Brahma god who believed that he was the first god, that he was the creator god, and the Buddha put to him that it wasn't actually the first god, it was that he'd been alive for so long that he'd actually forgotten where he'd come from.
So there
are gods, there are different realms of existence, there are gods, there are demons, there are devils, there are devas, which are heavenly beings. There are all those supernatural beings are there within the Buddhist canon. When asked specifically about a creator god, what the Buddha said was that it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter whether there is one or there isn't, because all the Buddha's teaching was about was this process of becoming enlightened. That's all it was, and anything that was outside of that was irrelevant. So questions about the universe, questions about God were to be put aside to concentrate instead on the path.
Mm-hmm. And before we throw it back to you, Amit, I think it's always worth remembering in anything like this, there's a very personal aspect to Buddhism, just like Hinduism, just like Christianity, right? Mm-hmm. And it's worth remembering that and taking that step back to say, okay, what do the scriptures say and what do these people that believe say? Because this person here and this person here, just like the Christians in the front pew and the back pew, just like the Muslims, you know, at different mosques or whatever, everybody's got just a little bit of a different take and a different understanding.
Yes. That's a very important point to make, because I want to stress here, because there are so many different flavors of Buddhism as it's traveled across the time and culture, and people believe different things and have different interpretations. I'm talking specifically about the scriptural aspect of Buddhism rather than coming from a particular belief.
Right. And I think keeping those, you know, in your mind, that difference between those two is always super important. The other thing I wanted to say real briefly is that Buddha is used, the Buddha is used as a character in a handful of other culture stories. There's one that's jumping to mind right now, which is about the Monkey King. So this is a Chinese ancient, you know, spiritual kind of cultural story in this, you know, vein of mythology that we get, you know, across the world. And it basically... The short version of it is Monkey King starts going a little crazy. None of the gods can contain him. The gods go find the Buddha, and the Buddha gives the Monkey King a challenge that he can't complete. And so the Buddha's like, take that, calm down. And like, you know, it's cool that while maybe in the scriptures themselves, Buddha isn't viewed as this, you know, divine creator, God, or all powerful, I control everything type, you know, character. But other cultures take that and they go, oh man, this guy's great. Let me just, you know, drop him in my book, you know? And that's one of the fascinating things about looking further into this stuff.
Yeah.
What do you think, man? What do you think, Amit?
That's a great point. And that's kind of where I wanted to ask the next couple of questions, because I've heard the Indian version of Buddhism,
sure.
Which, and by the way, everyone should read The Monkey King. It's an amazing story. The Monkey King actually pees on one of Buddha's fingers, yes, which is hilarious.
Yes,
but yeah, in India, what some Hindus believe is that the Buddha is just another incarnation of Vishnu, right? Because Vishnu is kind of like this big god who like incarnates into multiple forms, each time becoming more and more perfect as a human, basically. And at one point, he reaches Buddha, which is like enlightened human. And I guess what parts of Buddhism are, you know, how do you recognize which parts of Buddhism are canonical versus like Buddhism extended universe?
Oh, that's a really good question. And it changes is the simple answer. Is the Buddhist canon, the oldest parts of the Buddhist canon that we have, which are called the earliest EBTs or early Buddhist texts, are from what's called the Pali canon, because it was originally spoken and then later written down in the Pali language. So they are the Digha Nikaya, the Majjhima Nikaya, Samyutta Nikaya, and Anguttara Nikaya, if memory serves correctly, and then little bits of other things. They're the oldest written forms of Buddhism, and they have kind of Chinese variants which went off, and there's some dispute among scholars about which are the actually earliest Buddhist texts. Obviously, those are the kind of ones that scholars consider are the closest to what the historical figure actually taught and what that sect actually taught. But those things have changed over time, as with anything, they've gone through different iterations, and as Buddhism developed, this idea developed, of what's called the Bodhisattva ideal, which is essentially where someone can put off enlightenment so that they can go out and help other people attain enlightenment. And this was a later idea in Buddhism. And it's distinguished from the earlier Buddhist texts by the name Mahayana. The earliest texts we have come from what are called the Theravada. So the Mahayana, a later Buddhist text, and incorporate this ideal. And the Mahayana includes Tibetan Buddhism, which most people in the West are most familiar with, or Zen Buddhism. They all come under the Mahayana umbrella. So yeah. Buddhism, the scriptures themselves have changed. So there isn't really the central concepts of compassion, of the path to enlightenment, all those things run throughout, even into modern Western Buddhism, and some kind of completely secular forms of Buddhism. Those things are still there. Those concepts are still there. But there's so much kind of stuff in the boundaries that it's hard to give a distinct answer as to what Buddhism actually is. It's a greatly diverse tradition, secular. Do you want to speak on this?
Yeah, I was just going to say, because I definitely have more to do when it comes to learning about Buddhism, but I was glad that you mentioned Zen Buddhism as well, because that's generally more like a Japanese thing, if I remember correctly. And that brings in aspects of Shintoism. And this is what happens, right? Is we, because we're all people because we're all just running around trying to answer stuff and learn about things. We hear something from somebody and we go, oh yeah, give me just a little bit of that, you know? But another thing I think is worth bringing up as well is, remember that this isn't, it's not a dead religion, right? It's out yeah. there being practiced right now. I mean, most recently, one of the things that could have a really big influence on, you know, cultural practices and understandings of Buddhism 200 years from now is what happens when the current Dalai Lama dies. There is yeah. a big fight right now between there India, is. Tibet, and China. And I'm not talking about the people there. I'm uh-huh. talking about the governmental structures. You know, the governmental structures yep. in those areas are actively trying to, you know, go ahead and shoehorn their next Dalai Lama in. And the Dalai Lama even recently said, we don't know how much of a joke this was or not. I'll put that on there. But the Dalai Lama recently said, I may come back as a woman. I may not come back at all. That right there is a shift, is a pretty darn big shift, to be honest. The idea that he would not come back at all. I mean, that's the whole point, right? That's what Richard was talking about with the Bodhisattvas, the idea that, you know, this person hasn't attained enlightenment, but specifically chooses to come back to help all of us that haven't gotten there yet. Now, again, I don't believe any of this is real or anything, but it's really interesting to just dive into it and to understand it. And that simple statement right there by the Dalai Lama could change the next 100 years of Buddhism. I mean, what if he decides, quote unquote, for those at home, he decides he's going to come back as a woman. Well, now you've got for the very first time a Dalai Lama as a woman. That just changes the whole game. Imagine if the Pope for the Catholic Church step down tomorrow and they elect a woman. How much of a shift that would have to bring about in the understanding of the religion as a whole. Everything would all of a sudden, now we've got, okay, wait a second, maybe we weren't thinking right. Maybe we change it up a little bit. But yeah, it's easier with those things when we dig up stuff and nobody's still around to tell us how Latin was spoken by the ancient Romans, right? It's easier when we can just dig up stuff in Scandinavia and go, this is what the Norse people thought. When it's alive and it's still changing and it's still growing, it gets a little bit harder for sure. But I hope we did at least kind of answer. Did we sort of answer, Amit? Are we doing okay?
Yeah. No, any information helps. I mean, like, I think at least with Hinduism, the most that I've learned, I grew up as a Christian in India, which is terribly unfortunate. But the most I've learned about Hinduism was actually from talking to one of my really close friends, whom I'm still in touch with. So, yeah, I mean, like, I love hearing from people who actually know about the religion. This made a lot of sense.
And I just want to address one of the questions in chat briefly, just before we wrap, about afterlife in Buddhism. Because the kind of common concept is the idea of reincarnation. But reincarnation in Buddhism is slightly different from reincarnation in Hinduism. In as much as in Hinduism, the soul is a spark from God that has come down, and it's a thing, it's a solid thing called Atta or Atman. In Buddhism, it's a negation of that. It's called Anatta or Anatman, and what it is it's not a solid thing. It's our clinging to ideas that and perceptions and things that is actually reincarnated. It's not, there isn't a solid soul concept. And the whole idea of Buddhism is to stop being reborn. When people say Buddhists believe in reincarnation, it's not like Christians believe in heaven, that's something that's going to be for eternity. in Buddhism, the idea is actually to stop it happening, being enlightened. Nirvana is literally, it's the word means going out. It's described like a candle going out. And that's the whole idea, to stop this clinging, to stop this craving, to stop suffering, and to let the soul stop being reborn altogether.
Well, Amit,
yeah,
thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, right, go ahead.
No. Wrap us up, man.
I was just going to draw a parallel. People misunderstand karma, the Hindu concept of karma, very often. They're like, oh yeah, do good things and good things will happen to you. That's not how it actually works. Yeah. It is, like, at least not to the more religious Hindus, where they believe that if you do good things in this life, your next life will be better.
Yeah.
Or if you do shitty things in this life, you could be reborn as a bug.
Yeah. You don't get the good or the bad in this life from what you do. It's all after the fact, after the credits roll. Well, Amit, thank you so much. Thanks so much for giving us a call, brother. We're gonna wrap up. You know where we are, man. You know where we hang out. Come hang out with us every week when you can, and I'm sure we'll see you again. Awesome. Where's that producer of ours? You're muted.
It's no good talking to us when we can't hear you.
How's that?
Much better.
I my camera. Okay. So someone was saying they missed Band-Aid, so I was trying to get my camera to point at Band-Aid because he's laying really cute right down there. But I think I'm going to have to interrupt his cuteness just to grab him. In the meantime, Secular Rarity, Richard, whoever wants to go first, what do you guys got going on?
You first, Richard.
Oh, we do a weekly podcast, myself, Laura McGee, and Richard Gill, called Skeptic Hangout, where we just shoot shit. Secular's been on there, but that episode's not been released yet. That's a rainy day episode. So if you want to see more of me and Secular Rarity, there will be an episode on, what did we talk about? I can't remember
Mormonism.
What we talked about. Mormonism, which was very interesting. We had a great conversation.
We almost converted, y'all.
When we talked at the top of this show about me and Secular being able to shoot shit, that's literally what happened on that episode. It's just us two talking about Mormonism. So that'll be out at some point. And I also do my sorry.
Nope, you finish first.
No, I was just saying I also have a show of my own, which is more academic based, and where I kind of go into the more it's about religion, philosophy, all those kinds of things which I'm academically interested in. So that's on a much rarer basis, and that's just me talking in a monotonous voice. So it's a little bit more boring, less exciting. But if you're into the academic side of stuff, go and check that out.
So I was walking, this is probably about a month ago, maybe a little longer, and I saw some Mormons, and I immediately started a dialogue with them. They asked my phone number, they asked if they'd come over. They've come over a couple times since then, and they're going to be coming over again next week. And it's made for some really interesting conversations and has given me plenty of time to practice my street epistemology.
Yeah.
I'm trying to break down the walls a little bit, get them more lax. They wouldn't play video games. Apparently, they're not allowed to while they're on their retreats. But, you know, I'm trying to humanize the dialogue more than anything.
Yes, and learn from people. You know, there's a time and a place where all of us non-believers and sinners and heathens, we can all get together and we can laugh about the silly stuff and we can yell about the stuff that makes us angry. But when it comes to talking with other people, I think that's a very clear time where we pull all that back, we sit there, we listen respectfully, we challenge respectfully, and we do our best to just be kind about it. I mean, this is your friendly neighborhood atheist after all, right?
I should have called it your friendly neighborhood atheists. The goal of the channel is a bunch of friendly atheists, not just me, you know, being as friendly as possible and putting a positive spin on atheism.
That's right.
Left, right, left. Thank you for the $5 super chat. Tax for missing the whole show and for waking up Band-Aid.
Yeah. Shame.
Anyways, there will be no pickup line this Thursday because I'm leaving at like 5 a.m. Friday. So is Hannah. We're going to be going to the Recovering from Religion excursion, which is in North Carolina. We're going to have a like a lodge in the mountains. I'm so friggin' so excited about this. It's going to be like a, from how they've described it, a mental health retreat. Dr. Daryl Ray will be leading some workshops along with many other atheists I'm sure you're familiar with. We're going to be going on hikes, going through the mountains. I'm excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. So there will be no pickup line this Thursday, but we will be returning the following week. Next week for The Perspective, I actually don't know who's hosting, so I can't announce that right now. I'm working on it. I took those 2 weeks off. I got a little behind on my scheduling, so I'm trying to catch up as quickly as possible. Also, thank you to our top-tier patrons, Cindy Plaza, Left, Right, Left, Kenneth Leonard, Sky, Jump and Shoot, Oz, excuse me, Secular Rarity, Philip Leach, Caitlin Beyond, Toast, Richard Gilliver, Sunset Sarge, Amit Matthew, Ray Sylvester, and Kyle Brewer. And for those who don't know, Kyle Brewer is on Neil 604 Atheist right now. He just had his deconversion story. Now they're doing the after party. We are going to jump in Discord. After Discord, I do highly recommend everyone go to Neil 604 and check out the Kyle Brewer after party. Richard Secular, thank you so much. We'll see you in Discord after.
Thank you.
We'll talk about that off camera, but just for everyone listening, that's something I want to do someday on this show. Were you listening?
No, I'm sorry.
I'm learning. Okay, you're more red than you are when you say masturbate.
Oh, because I'm embarrassed and it's
I caught you.
I'm sorry. And I mean absolutely.
I'm a terrible co-host.